This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
Conor goes crazy and UFC 223 pays the price. Khabib is your new lightweight champion and still has yet to lose a round in his entire UFC career. Should the UFC have shared the Conor video? Brock Lesnar is back with the WWE, but what about the UFC? And we are back for another episode of the TSN MMA show. Thanks for those listening on TSN Radio in Toronto and in Ottawa. And if you're listening to the podcast, please tell your friends, review the show, and subscribe. Also, if you're listening to the radio show, you are getting an abridged version of the show. The full show is available in podcast form, wherever podcasts are found. I think we actually just got added to the Google Play Store yesterday.
That's pretty good news.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're using Google Play, if you're a Google Play subscriber like I am, you can find the show now, which is great news. So Conor McGregor, the big story of last week. Yeah, let's dive right in. So I was at Media Day.
Yeah, I wanted to hear your side being there.
Yeah, so basically I had finished my interviews and I was reviewing some tape and I heard like a melee breakout behind me. I heard just a lot of noise and then a big group was there and I went to go and check out what was going on, and somebody from the UFC's PR team said, "For your own safety, you should probably stay here."
Yeah.
So I listened. To, you know, I don't want to.
You didn't want to jump into the riot.
Yeah. Well, I don't. I didn't want to A, jump
You're
into
not
the
a
riot,
hooligan or...
and B, you know, we're also partners with the UFC,
Absolutely.
And if I don't, you know, I need to stay on good terms with the PR team, and I respect the PR team a lot. But the reason why I wanted to jump in is I thought it was I saw Conor. I didn't know who anybody else was. And I thought it was just media following him. I thought it was TMZ and all, you know, and yep. I wanted to get some footage. I wanted to get some pictures. But, you know, I wasn't able to because I listened to the PR team and I just thought I'd missed my window. A friend of mine, Jim Edwards, a colleague of mine from MMANIT.com, got a video of it and allowed TSN to use it with a courtesy, which was very nice of him. But I didn't get that close to what was going on. But Conor was 8 feet away from me. I made eye contact with him. That's how close he was to me. And then
that was before the
bus part. That was basically when he had come and crashed Media Day. So, you know, Conor, I guess he must have known the Media Day was from this time to this time, and I guess he just ran late,
I heard it was his plan was to show up on Media Day, you know, maybe during the conference and kind of make a scene there.
You know, if he showed up in Media Day, I just worry about what would have happened. I mean, you could have seen like almost the equivalent of a battle royal.
We saw bottle throws. Remember they started throwing water bottles at each other with
Diaz.
Well,
that was at a press conference, though.
Yeah.
Media Day, it's all the media members on the floor with all the fighters. So, like, all the main card fighters, as well as Carolina was there, along with Felice Herrig, and Ray Borg was there with Moreno, and then all the main card fighters. So, if he would have gone in there with all of his, you know, basically Irish hooligans and, you know, Irish training partners that had come with him, it could have basically been the equivalent of like a UFC Royal Rumble.
Yeah, oh yeah, probably.
Because I'm guessing that...
You never know. You can't expect anything. Like, you're seeing what Conor did? Who knows, man?
That being said, I don't know how many people would have actively gone into the mix. I think Khabib and everybody that was with Khabib would have had to get in the mix. But we're talking about like an arena, like concrete floors, and it could have been really ugly. Yeah. Plus, you've got members of the media there. I don't know how to defend myself if a Charlie Ward from SBG comes charging at me. What am I going to do? Duck for cover. But then you're also talking about police involvement and security involvement.
Yeah.
You know, like it could have been a really serious situation. You know, a lot of the questioning that I had gotten in the different interviews I had done last week when people asked for my account was, do you think this was a stunt? You know, and my thought was, if this was a stunt, it went terribly wrong. We're talking about major collateral damage to the UFC's card. We're talking about an arrest and a courthouse appearance from Conor McGregor. So if this was a stunt, and I personally don't think it was, it went terribly wrong.
I think maybe he planned to show up on Media Day and maybe the UFC was okay with it. But the way it escalated, I don't think it was. That obviously wasn't planned that way, which I think was crazy. But, I mean, my thing is, does Conor's stock go up from this in a weird way?
Well, if you
look at the entertainment, he was the biggest storyline of all of this. You know, he's the one now, like, he's getting charged, but, you know, he got $50,000 bail, nothing crazy. I mean, it's just going to want to build the fight with Khabib maybe even more in the future. Like, I don't think his stock really goes down. I mean, regardless, if you hate Conor McGregor now, you're going to be more invested in this fight than you were before. So I think it's in a weird way his stock has gone up from this.
And as a result of what he did, Khabib's has too.
Absolutely.
Like, Khabib's profile has raised a ton. People,
absolutely.
Who is Conor McGregor going after? If you're talking about Conor, the conversation is still going to end up coming back to Khabib.
Yeah.
Like, why was he attacking a bus? Well, Khabib's on the bus.
But
who's Khabib?
There is a lot of backstory, too. I mean, my understanding was there was problems between Artem Lobov and, you know, the Khabib team. And then that's where Conor was coming in to defend Artem.
Yeah,
who knows?
That was
right?
on Tuesday night at the hotel. It was on camera. So, yeah,
but
it's not just speculation.
It was nothing serious like that. That should have escalated to this.
No, I mean, like, Artem got grabbed by the neck and I think slapped.
Yeah, which is still
assault, but
but for Conor McGregor to do what he did,
To fly a private jet into New York.
But even if you look at the footage of Conor, like he doesn't really. I mean, I don't know. I don't think he planned on that at all, right? He grabbed the big barricade, which you know, easy to take away from. He grabbed you know some other things, but I don't even think he thought the dolly would have done that damage, right? But at that point, it's too late, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's strange. I mean, if you look at the UFC embedded video they put out, and we should talk about whether they should have put that out, it's by far the most viewed episode of embedded that they've ever done.
Absolutely.
4.3 million
Dana
as of
White
yesterday.
Posted about it as well on his social media.
Yeah, and if you look at the top 10 all-time embedded most viewed, 9 of them are Conor McGregor in the top 10. The only one that wasn't Conor McGregor is when Daniel Cormier has his heart broken by being told that John Jones has failed a drug test at UFC 200 and will not be fighting him like a day or two later, whatever it was. 2 days later, I think it was.
But like the big point is too, like talking about John Jones, it was the biggest superstar because of his controversy outside. Conor McGregor, the biggest a lot because of his controversy outside of the ring. So it seems like, you know, the bad guys are you getting and stealing all the attention.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's very odd. Like this whole thing is, it's a very strange circumstance. And I also just think that Conor, for what he did, who knows, but, you know, about his public profile and what ends up happening. But I think I tend to agree with you. It just makes his profile bigger. He's not doing much these days. You know, you're not seeing him out in public. You're not seeing him get interviewed pretty much anywhere. When he shows up, it's an event.
Always. Yeah.
Doesn't
like,
matter
even
what happens.
If he watches the event, you hear the biggest news is, you know, Connor's getting yelled
Conor,
at
not
to sit
impressed
down.
By Khabib.
Like, he's yelling and screaming and swearing, telling everyone to F off and running around circles in the arena. Like, he brings that with him. Like, I think the big question a lot of people are asking for, was he under the influence of something, right? Is he into drugs? Is he into cocaine that's getting him? Or is he just a wild animal like he is? But I don't know. It's just sucks to hear. Like, even I'm hearing stories where Borg, you know, possibly might not fight again because of, like, you know, the cuts in his eye that they found glass in. So I think that's the saddest part of the whole story. Is, you know, the guys that got injured from this couldn't fight. We had, you know, guys drop out, not get their money to pay. They got their show money, but they didn't get their performance.
Yeah, which is a big deal. It's
which
a big
people
deal.
People who are listening don't understand. The UFC contracts are usually, let's use the example of $50,000 a show, but to win, it's another $50,000. That's doubling your money. That's a lot of money that a lot of guys were missing out on.
Yeah.
And for someone like Ray Borg, where they're talking about he might have trouble fighting again, or who knows with these little, I think they're calling them abrasions on his eye. Whatever it is, it's not right for those guys. So I'm curious to see what's going to happen in that regard as well.
Yeah, it was very interesting. One thing that surprised me is that they didn't try to do, once they realized Chiesa was scratched, they didn't try to do Anthony Pettis versus like Alex Caceres, like, or Felder versus Caceres at like a catchweight. But Caceres at 155 would be difficult, I guess. I mean, I think he's fought at 135 and 145.
And then Felder and Pettis are
Felder and Pettis are
teammates,
best buddies, right?
Yeah, so
they weren't
going to
fight.
That.
So a lot of people lost potentially a lot of money out of this.
Before we jump that, what was your take on the fighters in the bus? Like, how do you think they reacted to it?
Well, there's video. There's video from inside the bus.
Yeah.
I mean, Khabib wanted to go out and fight Conor. Khabib's manager wanted to go out and fight Conor. Other people just seemed like, what's this guy doing?
Yeah,
and seemed like worried about what was happening.
What I've been hearing is a lot of people, they didn't know what was happening.
Yeah,
I think Rose said she didn't know it was Conor, but it's weird to me that they're all using this word terrorist attack. They thought it was a terrorist attack. I'm like, okay, let's settle down a little bit and not get crazy. But I mean, at one point they were saying Rose was so shook up that she couldn't fight. And
well, the reason
were
they why Rose was sitting. I had asked Rose what happened. She was sitting, like, let's say I'm sitting here. The row in front of her is where, like, a chair or something hit and, like, broke the window. Like, it was coming right for her head. Like, that was from her vantage point, and that's why she was freaked out.
Yeah, well, understandable.
And she managed to, despite being shaken up, get back into fight mode and win, beat Joanna at her own game. But we'll get to that a little bit later on. I just, with this McGregor situation, I just think it makes this Khabib and Conor fight so huge. Yeah. And that's the sad part about it, because I think that's in poor taste. I think booking this fight after what happened is pretty tasteless. And I think that I actually think releasing the video on Embedded was a bad look, even though ultimately they benefit from it. They get a lot of views. Yeah. They get tons of eyeballs. They can build this promotionally. But then, again, the other side of my brain says to me, like, these guys are fighters. Like, these guys, their job is to settle scores in the octagon.
Yeah.
So even though Conor went and broke the law, Khabib's not going to be like, no, I'm not going to fight this guy. He's crazy. And he's like, no, let's do this.
Yeah, let's finish it, settle it in a different way.
Khabib was told me on several occasions, like, you know how to get a hold of me? Text me your location. I'll be there.
Yeah.
Text me your location.
That's the classier way to do it. It's still ridiculous that grown men are wanting to argue and fight over certain things like that as sportsmen, as role models. But, I mean, it is reality. If they're going to do it, at least do it in the octagon if you're going to talk about it that way.
Like a sanctioned environment.
But even, the other point is, like, even if he gets a year suspension in New York or wherever, he can still go fight in Ireland. He can go fight in Russia. So it doesn't really hold him back in any way from fighting.
If Conor gets a suspension?
Well, yeah. If Conor gets a suspension from New York, he can also fight elsewhere.
Not really, though, because the governing bodies will honor those suspensions usually. And if the UFC is doing an event in that place, they're not going to sanction. They won't put Conor on a card.
Okay.
But I don't think the commission is going to sanction Conor McGregor. He wasn't like, I don't even know if he was. Like, he's got really no involvement. I mean, it's basically the equivalent of someone breaking the law.
It's rather than the commission. But my understanding, he is getting a suspension.
From the commission or from the UFC?
Some of the medias were saying it. I don't know if they don't know anything and they're just, you know, spitting out facts. But he's going to have some suspension from the UFC regardless.
So yeah, I think so, too. But the UFC has said, you know, this guy's not going to probably not able to fight until September. So if you say, okay, we're giving him a 6-month suspension or whatever it is. It seems like a slap on the wrist because he probably wasn't going to fight during that time anyways.
I think it's just an example of if you got the popularity and you got the money, you know, you get away with things more than others will.
Yeah, and if anything, it raises his profile, like you said. Yeah. I think he was in the news all week. He stole the show. The event was almost an afterthought by the time all was said and done, at least in terms of the coverage of it. I don't think people are talking about Khabib beating Iaquinta if you're kind of a fair weather fan or you're looking at things from the periphery.
And his mugshot picture will probably be used for years, you know, in some sort of positive way. You know, it's crazy.
I was with a crime reporter, actually, in the courtroom. I actually went to the courtroom. I was covering the hearing. And he works for TMZ, and he used to be like a crime reporter for the New York Post for 20 years. And he said to me, he goes, if that is a real mugshot, it was leaked illegally because the police stations are legally not allowed to release these mugshots.
Really?
Yeah. So it would have been like a rogue officer that got a picture of it and leaked it to the media, which is surprising.
Yeah. A lot of interesting.
He did have the
things.
Wrong birthday on it. So, but then again, he was also wearing the same shirt that he was arrested in. So who knows?
Well, it's a lot of interesting things. But what also interested me was the process of finding a replacement for Holloway, which was pretty interesting. That is another topic.
Chapter
that we
two.
Go on. Yeah,
that's we can move on to that. I mean, so it's Friday. We now find out that Borg and Chiesa have been scratched. All these guys are weighing in anyways. Like Caceres weighed in because they want to get their show money. So Caceres weighs in. Pettis weighs in. Felder and Iaquinta weigh in because they're fighting each other. So when you see that happening, you know, and then you find out, I guess, about 30 or 40 minutes into weigh-ins that they're not going to let Holloway attempt to continue cutting weight. He said he had 4 pounds to go, I believe.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah.
I heard he cracked under 159.
Yeah. How
but he
how
won't
hard
disclose
is it,
how much.
How hard is it to cut 4 pounds in an hour?
Well, it all depends how much you cut, how drained. I mean, it sounds easy if it's, you know, only 10 pounds, but he won't disclose how much he cut from, so it's really tough.
Well, it was apparently in the neighborhood of 180 to 185.
Yeah, I've heard even more. He doesn't want to talk about it, so who knows? But regardless, I mean, it's individual. You hear guys who won't cut a pound sometimes. You're like, it's a pound, man. Like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, sometimes a pound is hard. Sometimes half a pound you can't do. So I think it's all individual. And that's it's hard to give an answer to that.
It's another casualty of the event is that we won't get to see what would have happened between Holloway and Khabib, because
I think that would
have been very interesting.
Even though the Ferguson fight went, we all got hyped again with Holloway. We're like, okay, it got saved, and now we're excited, but that wasn't the case.
And then when it ended up being Al, I was like, okay, well, Khabib's just fighting someone. He's fighting someone. And the other thing that really rubbed me the wrong way is that apparently they wouldn't let Paul Felder fight because of the rankings.
Yeah, your favorite topic.
Yep, and I posted yesterday... Paul Felder retweeted this, that if you go to Fight Matrix, which is what Cajun Johnson said the UFC should use because it's based on mathematics, Felder is the 8th-ranked lightweight in the UFC, according to them.
Yeah. Well, the other
if his manager didn't bring that up, which he should have said to the commission, listen, go to Fight Matrix, look at the ratings, it's legit, they have a mathematical formula. That's a big problem.
Yeah.
Because if he doesn't make a case that Felder is at least... could be considered a top 10 talent in the lightweight division or even top 15. That's a big problem with his management.
Well, the other issue is, it's like you're looking at, you know, Iaquinta, who's been out for 3 years. He's only fought, like he said, 90
seconds.
He's fought 49
seconds. Yeah, I think it was 49
seconds. 3 years.
Yeah.
But you have Felder, who's active, who's doing well, who's on a winning streak, who, you know, is climbing very quickly. I think Felder's the choice in my eyes.
Well, you know what? I actually thought Iaquinta was the guy who matched up best against Khabib. And I also thought that from a box office standpoint, when you're in New York, giving Iaquinta the fight in his backyard is probably the best outcome. So I am happy they went with that. But the reason why Felder would have been a really good outcome as well is because Felder weighed 155 flat.
Yeah.
So he could have contended for the title. So now you've got a legit title fight rather than a half title fight.
155.2.
0.2, but he didn't know.
And he didn't take off his shorts.
He didn't take off his shorts.
He
didn't think he would have had to. Why would he have thought he would have had to? At that point, he's fighting Paul Felder in his mind.
But at that point, like, if the commission's saying, I'm not going to give you the belt.
But he couldn't weigh in after
that
point.
But Dana said he would give him the belt or something like that.
Dana basically said, Dana basically said, this is how I interpreted what Dana said. They'd consider him to be the champion. Which means that the next fight would be for a vacant title, but, you know, Al would be in the red corner. He'd be the unofficial champion.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you call Khabib the real champion right now?
Yes.
You would?
Yeah, because...
I don't. I don't necessarily... I wouldn't agree with you there.
But in this situation, if there's a title fight, let's say it's Max Holloway versus Ortega, and Ortega weighs in at 146 and Holloway weighs in at 145. Ortega's just not eligible to win the title. You can still hold that fight... with Holloway having the ability to retain the title.
Yeah.
So I don't think taking the opportunity away from Khabib would make a lot of sense.
No, it doesn't make sense, but I mean, when you talk about the champion, the world champion, you look at the best person in division, and I don't think we're, you know, that fight reflected that. Again, many different reasons, but I still think we need to see, you know, what Ferguson can do against Khabib. We need to see what Conor McGregor can do. So instead,
it's a very disputed title. It's not an undisputed title.
Yeah, we need to see a little bit more before you call the lightweight, you know, the champion. We need to see, you know, there's three guys in that top that really need to fight out to see who the best is and the lightweights are.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And I mean, the other thing is I asked Dana White after the event, if you're not going to book Ferguson against Khabib and Conor, we don't know what's happening with, like, who else is in the mix?
Yeah. And I think Ferguson's just going through knee surgery now, right?
Yeah. Well, he said, I think he went through it yesterday.
Yesterday.
And Poirier and Gaethje, he said, both could potentially be considered after this, like the winner of this fight this weekend could be considered, which I think is, apparently there's championship language in Poirier's contract. So that's interesting to me.
Yeah, I heard that because that was one of the best parts of his contract he was excited for, that championship money or... I mean,
But Khabib's got Ramadan coming up. He doesn't want to fight till, you know, November anyways at MSG. That's when he wants to fight next. So you got a lot of time to let this kind of marinate and sort itself out.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, you want to start with the fight? You want to talk about that fight?
The Khabib-Iaquinta fight?
Yeah.
Yeah, why don't we start from the main event?
The storyline is set. I think
it's
good.
Now we've set the table. We know what's happening. And now we've got Khabib versus Iaquinta.
And it finally happened.
So here's where the line opens up. So I heard this kind of from an inside source. That when that line opened up, it was kind of a knee-jerk reaction. It opened up at -1050 for Khabib.
Yeah.
And then it went all the way down to -400.
Really?
Because I guess if a lot of people bet on one side early on, it can affect the line a lot. And then by the time it sorted itself out, it was around 7-1 at fight time for Khabib. But if you got Khabib at minus 400 against Iaquinta, that's a pretty big steal.
Yeah, it is pretty good.
Especially given what the outcome was.
You still need a lot of money to do
anything.
What
I told you was the best line of the night was when it opened up, it was plus 600 for Khabib by unanimous decision.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And then at fight time, it was plus 500. But that's still a massive number given how many decisions he has.
We're looking at it after the fact. But, I mean, I would have thought at least Khabib would have got a finish. You know, I would have predicted a finish with his wrestling.
But the thing,
Al only three rounds.
The thing we need to consider, though, is that Iaquinta had a full camp. Like, he wasn't fighting.
Preparing for three rounds, though, right?
Preparing for three rounds,
and he's preparing for another striker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not someone that's going to take him down.
That's true. He was totally
planning,
different fight.
You know, Felder's a good striker. So you know that the fight was going to be on the feet. He didn't have any good takedown defense. He's coming off of two bad knees where he didn't know if he could even push himself in a conditioning standpoint where, maybe his hard running, his hard sprint work, his strength and conditioning was probably suffered a lot because he was dealing with those knee injuries. So, I mean, a lot of people don't understand. Preparing for three rounds, people only think, three rounds, it's only 15 minutes. Like, that's one round. I challenge anyone who's never done anything to just
hit a punching bag for five straight. Yeah,
try to hit it for 5 minutes. Well, someone trying to hit your head while there's millions of people watching with the stress, with the anxiety, fighting. Even as an amateur, two-minute rounds is hard. It's really difficult. So there's a big difference between three and five rounds, and your camp really has to reflect that. Those extra two rounds in your camp really play, they're really tough, man.
And
that's
to
why
they're
called the championship rounds.
To Al's credit, he looked pretty fresh in 4 and 5.
Yeah, he looked really good. That was the most impressive part for me from Al. I think overall he got dominated and beat, but the biggest impression that I got was his conditioning was really good, even though he was preparing for, a three-round fight.
So in that fight, Khabib dominates the first two rounds with his wrestling, probably two 10-8 rounds.
Easily, yeah.
Smothers Iaquinta. And then things start to change a little bit. It's a little bit harder to get the takedown. Iaquinta said something very smart on the MMA Hour yesterday when he was interviewed, which was he could tell Khabib knew that this was going to be a five, that he had to pace himself for a five-round fight. He knew that after the second round that if he kept going for takedowns and missing them, he would tire himself out.
Yeah,
why he stopped going for takedowns. But, I didn't hear the commentary. We discussed this beforehand. Yeah. I was backstage watching on a monitor. There was commentary, but it was not loud. So, because we're doing interviews and stuff, we don't want to bleeding into our interviews. So, from my perspective watching the fight, I thought that there was maybe 30 seconds where Iaquinta had a window where Khabib showed any sort of vulnerability. And that's a stretch.
Yeah.
Because Khabib, to me, looked so dominant in that fight. And to me, it looked like his striking was, it obviously wasn't what his wrestling is, but it looked good. And I could tell what he was doing. He was trying to keep Iaquinta at a distance. He was using the jab. And Iaquinta, to his credit, was taking the jabs and trying to get inside, which was the right thing for him to do as well.
He wasn't moving his head off center line as well, but... I mean, he did land a good jab, but I think a lot of people are giving Rogan, a lot of heat because his whole commentary was, he was bigging up how great and how dominant he was. But from a striking standpoint, it is still pretty amateur. I mean, I don't think he meant amateur in the sense of, he belongs in the amateur rankings. It's amateur compared to other strikers in the UFC, and it's not really at par. It's subpar. You're not really... he's not showcasing great level of striking, but his thing that he does so well is wrestling. He doesn't have to do that. So we saw some holes, and I think that now opens up the eyes of everyone in the division, seeing that he's not as invincible as people think. So I think the whole thing of him being amateur was taken the wrong way, and I think, that's what media does. And even Rogan had to apologize for it, which...
He didn't have to, but he did.
He didn't have to, but he did, which I kind of hate because as a commentator myself, we're giving our honest opinion on things, and I don't feel like he had to apologize for it, but frustrating anyways.
So I'm going to ask you two technical questions.
Okay.
We'll start with the first one. What did you think of his striking? What did you think?
It was. There was a lot of basic things that he... from a typical, textbook answer, when you jab, you keep your chin down. When, you keep your hands up. It was a little bit more unorthodox, I will say, because he wasn't really getting hit anyways. His chin was high, but he wasn't getting hit anyways. You can look at some of the best strikers in the world. If you want to look at one of the best Muay Thai fighters, stand-up strikers, is Sanchai. He keeps his chin wide in the air, but his distance control is good. If your distance control is good and you're landing better, he is still outstriking you. So from a technical standpoint, it wasn't the most technical striking, but also his opponent wasn't doing anything for him to stop doing that. So, I mean, yeah, it's. I still think it wasn't. It still needs a lot of work, and I think he knows that. But from technical, but strategy wise, that's maybe a better answer. It worked, you know, but technically it wasn't great.
Okay, so here's question number two.
Yeah,
you, Joe Valtellini, you've survived two rounds with Khabib. He's just been smothering you. You're a little bit tired, but it's now become a striking match. You know, you're starting to stuff takedowns, having success. You're basically in Aiken's shoes. Okay. How do you beat Khabib? Standing up. What would you have done? I have more weapons than Al.
I would have chopped his legs. I would have probably. I mean,
But if you're chopping legs and you are opening yourself up for takedowns.
But on that's my point. Like that's what a lot of people don't understand. Low kicks. I get frustrated with this. But low kicks are good on the exit, not on the enter. I wouldn't enter with it. I would throw my hands. I would get close as soon as Khabib backed up. I would chop his legs so hard that you wouldn't believe it. He can't take me down when he's going backwards. So I'm going to jab, jab, jab because Khabib was backing up. So I used my punches to hit my leg. But Al did the right thing. He had to come forward. He just had to keep pressing. At that point, you just come forward. But he didn't have the arsenals and the timing with low kicks. Like, both, like, I'm, you know, I was a world champion kickboxer for a reason. So it does frustrate me. And I'm going to talk about how frustrated I am with Joanna not knowing how to finish Rose's leg in the fight. But as a low kicker myself, I mean, people just need to learn from me, man. It's frustrating me. It's so frustrating to me. Like, I mean, I can say it, but Al was a little amateur in his striking too. Like, there's a lot of things that he could have done. Yes, you're tired, but the kicking game has to be evolved more in this sport, and it's frustrating that it's not. But yes, I would have easily backed him up and hit exit low kicks all day on him.
This is why I like having you on the show, because I can't call people's striking amateur.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, I could watch. There's only a few guys, you know, like guys like Connor, I can really hype up their striking. But there's very few that I can really say that, like, I mean, I love their striking. I think it's incredible. But, there's...
Who are those people? Who's the best striker in the UFC?
Right now? Well, I always liked, again, Anderson Silva, because his distance control was good. I think one of the best strikers, you know, Conor McGregor still, probably.
Yeah,
his ability to switch stance, his ability to box,
Connor's
his
not
ability
overrated.
To use his kicks. Like, he has the tools, the weapons, the stance switching, the technical, the distance control, the angling, you know, the ability to come forward, the ability to counterfight. Like, I look at multiple tools and weapons, and I think Connor does it well. Like, I mean, who are others that stand out? Like, Zabit looked really good as well. Like, I mean, I think Zabit, who I'm sure we'll talk about as the show goes on, but his striking looks pretty good too. Someone like Gaethje to me only has one style: come forward, hit to get hit. That to me is, you know, not great striking at the same time.
He's got good leg kicks from inside too, from close distance.
Who would you say? And then we'll go back to the
who do I think has the best striking?
Yeah,
can I say John Jones?
Yeah, fair.
I mean, he just knows how to use his reach.
Yeah.
And his striking isn't, from a technical standpoint, is actually quite weird. Like,
he throws different elbows and stuff like that.
And he's hard to take down. His striking, to me, in terms of technique, is really high level. And George's striking is quite good. People kind of underestimate him because he's not a finisher. But in terms of, like you mentioned, distance control and how well he utilizes his jab and
smart
how
strategy
he
based.
And just defensive striking. His defensive striking is really good. He doesn't get hit much.
For sure.
Yeah. And I mean, we're talking about the elite of the elite. And then, of course, Max Holloway, I think, is a fantastic striker as well.
His distance control is on point. Yeah. I mean, I look at it from defensive, like offensive, different tools. So I mean, I still would pick Connor, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. Because a lot of people feel like Connor has just gotten lucky. And I think that's crazy. Like, I think when you see it where he hits people on his
precision.
Yeah, it just has the precision.
Timing
and I think Amanda Nunes
right?
has that too, if you're looking at females. I think she's got really good precision and knows where to end her strikes and finish her strikes.
Yeah.
And Shevchenko also, if you're talking about women.
Shevchenko likes fighting a little short, coming forward. But yeah, she's still good, still aggressive. But I think for MMA, the ability to fight long and with good distance is the key.
Well, that's why I was so excited to see Holloway against Khabib. Because if he would have had the exact same situation where he weathers two rounds of striking, two rounds
totally
on the ground,
fight.
It would have been a different fight. Because his toolbox, as you mentioned, is just much more diverse and vast than Iaquintus's.
You need crack. Against Khabib, you need crack. Your little half jabs, the half shots. I mean, you need good punching power to really... put Khabib out. Like, you need to hit him, and you need to hit him with everything you got, and then Khabib's going to look at you and be like, all right, this is going to totally change things. With guys without that firepower, we call it, like, it's going to be really hard because Khabib can walk through that.
And here's the big kind of unspoken thing about this week that I think a lot of people are forgetting about because of all the craziness that happened. Imagine Holloway says, you know, I just can't do this. I'm injured, whatever. And they give the fight to Ortega. Yeah. Now you've got an interesting matchup.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been a cool fight.
I would have loved that. I would have liked that.
But ultimately, Khabib is dominant. He beats Iaquinta 50-44 on one card, 50-43 on the other two. I had it 50-43 myself. Let's move on to Rose Namajunas versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Jędrzejczyk, after the fight, is disappointed that she's lost because she won on volume. If you look at the stats, I think Rose landed about two-thirds or maybe 75%
right
of what Joanna landed.
160 landed for Joanna, but she threw 372. Rose landed 108 and threw 304.
It's about two-thirds. Yeah. That's interesting. But ultimately, you know, I didn't want to say this to Joanna, but what I was thinking at the time when I was interviewing is that, you know, not all strikes are created equal.
Yeah.
Like, you can look at numbers.
No, the numbers don't mean anything.
But Rose's power was just, she just was landing better strikes for the whole fight.
And again, like, what bothered me with this fight is Joanna's, you know, she can't accept it. She's always finding blame elsewhere. And it sounds like, you know, Ronda Rousey, someone who's always finding things to blame. She's having trouble taking the loss on herself. Like, first time, nutritionist.
Yeah,
now that's it. Nothing to do with her. But the problem was, you know, she didn't know how to defend the left hand too well. She kept getting, in the first fight, getting that left hook. Same thing. She was having trouble defending the left hand of Rose. And Rose's distance control was on point. So, I mean, she's got to start looking and blaming herself if she wants to improve as an athlete and as a martial artist.
Yeah, so what do you think she could have done better? Like, do you think she just could have kept chopping the legs?
Absolutely.
When did she stop?
She slowed down Rose. Well, I think it was in round three, she was landing them really well.
Yeah, that was the one round I gave you on. I actually had the same. I had a 49-46.
Like, she really did well. Like, she was landing. But then she started boxing when the leg was there. Like, a lot of people, it just drives me nuts. They have to mix their strikes. You don't just box and you don't just kick. You put them together. They're things called combination. If Joanna would do a punch-kick combination, if she threw a nice jab, then follow her low kick, she would land that low kick every single time.
Yeah, Rose is barely checking them.
No, but she was leading with them. So, like, when you sit there and you just throw it, yeah, it's going to be easier to defend. But if you throw your low kick behind the punch, you're going to be more successful at landing them. If Joanna learned a little bit of basic punch-to-kick combination, she would have finished that leg very easily. It was right there. She slowed her down. They don't know how to. Leg kicks in MMA are used as setups, but they're used to finish. Like, you got to go and be consistent with what's working, and it drove me nuts because in that fifth round, where on many people thought it was two rounds apiece going into the fifth round, if Joanna would have just kept up with those low kicks, especially in the fourth, the fifth round would have been hers. She would have won the fight. Like, I mean, it's just one weapon. Rose had no answer to it. Her coach Whitman is a boxing developed coach. You have to attack the legs, kick a body, kick a leg. You're a kickboxer. You got to start mixing your kicks well. Be a little bit more intelligent with your combinations. Like, it's frustrating to me.
Yeah, well, I get that sense.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's hard for me to sit here and not get frustrated with it. Because there's someone here that can help almost so many people in the UFC, and it's just like they're not doing it.
But that was the one fight where I thought Rogan made a good point. Where I was actually sorry listening to the commentary, Rogan made lots of good points during the card. But he basically said that at the end of the third, he said that now it's time to see what Rose is made of because Joanna had that was her best round.
Absolutely.
It was weird. All three judges gave Joanna a different round, but I thought the third round was definitively Joanna, I thought the other four rounds. I mean, I thought four could have gone to either of them, but I thought that Rose had won one and two, no problem. Joanna, I thought, won the third. And then I thought that Rose for sure won the fifth. So I thought three and four could have gone to Joanna, but I gave Rose number four.
I thought it was closer than a lot of people came out to say. I thought it was closer. I mean, I didn't think Rose dominated necessarily.
I just thought she won by inches. It wasn't a domination.
But a lot of people are calling it like a dominant win, and I'm like,
No, I don't agree with that. I thought
A lot of people are saying 4-1 to Rose. Like,
that's how I
even,
had it.
I thought even the fifth round, I thought Joanna was doing well until she got taken down.
Yeah. Yeah, that takedown made all the difference.
Look how much they waited the one. I was like, to me, it could have still been maybe a split decision because really I didn't think, you know, Rose was doing that well in the fifth round either. Like, I mean, everyone's, like, the biggest problem I know a lot of people complain about is one takedown is being valued so much.
But it depends on control, right? If she's controlling a minute and a half of a round where Joanna's edging her out, that swings things.
Yeah, but I mean, if you get up, I mean, I think they value that one takedown too much, but... I mean, I overall think Rose won the fight. That's my opinion. But I got to give Joanna a little bit more credit. She did, you know, better than most people expected. But if she would have just finished with those low kicks, it would have been her fight.
Yeah, well, 49-46 across the board indicates that it was a lopsided fight. But like you said, if somebody would have given Joanna the first round because of her leg kicks or the second round because of her leg kicks.
I would have given it a split and been fine with it.
Yeah, or if Joanna would have won a split.
No, if Rose would have won the split, I thought it was that close. When I was asked, I was watching it with I did a seminar in San Fran in one of like the biggest gyms in North America. So we watched the fights after, and everybody was asking me and curious. I'm like, you know what? I wouldn't be surprised. Rose by split decision.
Yeah.
That was kind of my prediction. Mm-hmm. So, but who knows?
Well, you could tell Joanna was happy with her performance at the end of the fight. She wasn't like, didn't look defeated, but.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, that's how I had it, was 49-46. And that doesn't mean that I thought that it was a lopsided fight. It's just I thought that Rose had won those rounds by a little bit.
Yeah.
Whereas I thought Joanna really won the third round. Like, I was surprised the judges didn't give Joanna the third round because that's where I thought she really started to take over.
Yeah, I was happy with 3-2 almost for Rose. Yeah, I wouldn't have necessarily gave it, you know, that 4-1 everyone's calling, but still, decent fight.
Yeah, I think you just got to go round by round, and that's how I, you know.
Yeah, and it just, I love how Rose's stock is going up. I like how she was able to overcome all these things and that positive message and the mindset. So, I mean, I'm very happy she won. I think she's just that fresh air of the Conor McGregor era.
And then you've got Renato Moicano versus Calvin Kattar. That was a good fight. I just thought that Moicano was doing everything Kattar did but better.
Yeah, like, that's basically my assessment. Those left kicks looked really good. I mean, yeah.
Moicano's a good fighter, man. Moicano's and so really is Kattar. Like, Kattar wasn't buckling at all. He didn't look defeated. I think his corner knew that he was down.
Yeah, he got struck pretty bad, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like 3-1.
And then a fight that people are calling the fight of the year so far, Zabit Magomedsharipov versus Kyle Bochniak, 29-28, 30-27, 30-27 for Zabit. And man, Zabit just, like you said, he's got a lot of weapons.
Oh, everything.
And I don't know who's going to want to fight this guy. Like, I hope the people that do the rankings don't say, oh, Bochniak's unranked, so we're not going to rank Zabit. No, you put Zabit in the damn rankings.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if he beats a ranked guy. Just because someone's ranked, like, again, this is the Felder situation all over again. This Alexander Hernandez comes in and beats Benil Dariush, who's ranked whatever, 12th. So now he's ranked 12th.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not really how it works.
Well, sometimes
you got to look at body of work.
Look at Emmett, too, though. Emmett jumped the rankings really
jumped
quickly.
Jumped like third.
Yeah.
But that's crazy.
Yeah.
He didn't beat Yair Rodriguez, so why does he jump Yair Rodriguez? Just because he beat a guy that's ranked, whatever, third or fourth in Lamas.
But talking about Yair Rodriguez, that's the fight I think people want to see.
It doesn't look like it's going to happen, though. Yair was saying he's got his next fight being announced soon, so I imagine that that's not going to be against Zabit.
Okay.
And Yair also said, I'd like to fight you, but, you know, we both need to be top 10.
Yeah.
So again, the rankings, that they come into play. But because people don't want to fight Zabit, if you're a ranked fighter, you're not going to want to fight Zabit.
No,
so you need, and the same thing happened with Usman. It took Usman forever to get ranked because none of the ranked fighters wanted to fight him. So you've got to start ranking him.
Yeah.
You got to take him into account.
Or you have to start forcing guys to take fights or somehow, you know. I think that's why the interim titles are there, to force the champions to fight the next guy in line over anything. But Kyle Bochniak, I don't know. Like, he looked good.
He raised his stock, even though he lost.
He raised his stock based on heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, just the ability to come forward and pressure. But again, he got beat. I mean, every round, like, I mean, one judge gave him one round, but he got beat.
I don't know which round that would be, maybe the third.
At the end of the day, like, I just like the fact that he showed heart. And what really stood out to me was his last 10 seconds of the fight. That really shows to me he's down, he's losing, he's getting hit, he's bleeding everywhere. He laid it out. He went down. Like, I mean, he was going to go down on his shield if he had to, which, I mean, that's something I really value. And I think that type of heart and commitment should be praised. But he got beat up pretty bad. And, you know, that's, but he made a fight of it.
Yeah, and he'll stick around and he'll get more fights, that's for sure. And Zabit just looks like he's going to be a tough out for anybody. And I imagine by the end of the year, he's probably going to be top five if he gets the right matchups.
He slowed down in that third round, too, right?
So,
yeah, that jumping, the spinning, that takes a lot of energy.
So how do you beat a guy like that? Let's hear the Joe V strategy.
You have to close him and pressure him. You have to stay close to him. You got to wear him out. You got to stay inside, and you got to do work on the inside. If you give him space, he's going to kick you all day, switch stances, move. You have to, just like Kyle did, you're going to have to pressure, try to fight him in on the inside, and you're gonna have to clinch him up, try to grab him against the cage. I think clinch fighting and cage fighting is gonna be a real big strategy for people to beat Zabit.
And Zabit was a minus 800 favorite going in, but he was also, to win by decision, was like over plus 200. So again, it's like these decision props are high for guys that are big favorites, because I guess everybody's expecting them to get the finish. This was, to me, one of the best statistical performances I've seen in the UFC in terms of volume. It was Chris Grutzemacher versus Joe Lozon. I actually told his corner man after the fight, and told Chris himself during this interview, that he landed 128 of 196 strikes. Like, that's just peak efficiency. That's 65% of strikes landed when you're throwing 200 strikes.
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy.
It was all in that weird range, man, where, like, they were in touch range the whole time. So they were trying to throw elbows and quick little uppercuts from there, you know, body shots. You know, he was even holding the hands, which I love, because this one clinched to low kicks. He was holding his hands and still throwing the low kick and throwing good uppercuts. I just think Lozon's had his time. 43 pro fights. I mean, his face swells up too easily. His face cuts too easily.
That's always been the case with him, yeah.
It's an indication where, like, I think he's, what, 32? Like, I think it's time for him to kind of, like, woo, look for his exit, because, man, you can't take much of that. Like, that was just a beating.
Yeah, he got in early. Like, he started his career early. Beat Jens Pulver as an underdog.
But, I mean, there's a time where these guys need to know their exit, right?
Yeah, I think he's lost something like 4 or 5 or something, or something along those lines.
But, what did you think of the stoppage? And, I mean, I want to hear it from your perspective.
Oh, I thought for sure they should have stopped that fight.
Yeah, because there's a lot of people complaining and a lot of other fighters being like, you know, we shouldn't have stopped it. And I'll give you my perspective.
Well, it says corner stoppage here. I didn't realize that it was a corner stoppage. I thought it was a doctor stoppage.
No, the corner stopped it.
Wow.
And the corner was saying something like, don't say, or something. I think something along the lines of the corner didn't want to tell, you know, Lozon that they stopped it, but it was the corner who stopped it.
Mm-hmm. But if they hadn't, it might have been a doctor stoppage anyways.
I think it's good, but now, from being outside, I now look on the other side, where if I'm Joe Lozon, how do I want to go? I mean, it's tough. It's not a world title fight. I mean, if it's a world title fight, I mean, I don't think you stop the fight. And but because it's like, you understand that There's no title implication for Lozon. There's no reason for him to take more damage. So I'm happy with the stoppage. If it was a world title fight, I would have said, you know what, let your guy go. It's probably might be his last chance. But good stoppage, man. Very good stoppage.
Prelims, Carolina Kovalkiewicz versus Felice Herrig. I mentioned you when I interviewed Felice this week. Yeah. I opened up the interview saying, I learned something about you, Felice. You know, I was sitting with Joe, and she like nodded. Of course, you're her friend. And I said, like, you know, people don't realize that your base is in striking, and we kind of went through that together. So you should give that a watch.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I'll take a look at it.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, I gave all 3 rounds to Carolina. I thought that her clinch work was really good, and that her striking
was a split decision.
It was a split decision. But at the end of the fight, if you looked at Felice, her head was down. She knew she lost the fight.
Yeah, but because I missed most of it.
Yeah.
So, the seminar, but the coach that Kieran Fitzgibbons, who's the coach of CSA Gym where I was at, he was saying how Felice should have kept her distance. She clinched up near the end, where she should have stayed a little bit longer and kind of struck on the outside a little bit more where she was winning, instead of clinching up the way she did at the end. But I got to give it a good full watch so I can kind of, because for that, I want to make sure I sit down, I really look at the X's and O's, because, you know, as a friend, I want to give my, you know, good reply.
Well, so essentially in the first round, Felice was winning for most of the round. And then until around the 3:30 mark, and then Carolina started to come on, and Carolina ended the round in full mount. So it just depends on how you score that. Like, that's the round I think Felice could have won. Like, if there was one round where I thought Felice had a lot of success, it was the first round. Then the second round, Carolina started to implement the clinch game a little bit more and was tagging her. And then in the third round, Carolina really put it on her in the clinch. So that's how that went. But yeah, let me know once you sit down and give it a really good watch. This one, you don't need to give much of a watch because it was 53 seconds.
Yep.
Olivier, first TKO win.
Yeah, well
that was
done.
Your pick.
Yeah, and I saw it right away. From like my standpoint, I knew it was over from that first body shot. And a lot of people didn't see it because Olivier landed this nice straight to the body. And it didn't look like I just picked up right away that I knew Dunham was hurt. And I knew that was that was going to be the one that finished it. Like, I don't know if Olivier saw that straight to the body that, you know, hurt.
Apparently, he dropped his training partner in the back with the exact same punch.
Yeah, nice straights to the body. But, like, he really hurt Dunham. And then I saw it right away. Dunham hit it well. But then once that knee hit, he didn't have that. You know, it was just one shot away. But, man, Olivier looked good.
He made a real name for himself.
I like it.
He was doing funny interviews afterwards. I was talking to him. He was on MMA Hour yesterday. After the fight, I was talking to him about the Conor incident. He goes, "Oh, I thought it was so funny because I wish I was there so I could have just watched it."
Yeah,
and I was
like,
and then he goes, "Then I saw people got hurt, and then it was a little bit less funny."
Yeah,
he got 50 G's.
Yeah, he was all happy on his Instagram, something about like being 50 G's richer now, and like, yeah, good for him, man.
Canadian
really
gangster.
Happy to see it. Like, you got to think, you know, who's the big Canadian star right now? And, you know, he might have put himself at the top. Put him up there.
Yeah,
like,
he's going to be ranked.
I mean, we had Misha Serkinov at one point, you know, where he needs a nice big win to get back into that title.
Alexis Davis is in the top five of her division. But if you look at a guy being ranked at lightweight, that means a lot more than being ranked at light heavyweight or women's flyweight or anything like that. That's
Olivier,
perhaps
well done,
the most
man.
Active division in sports.
Yep.
So good for Olivier. Ashley Evans-Smith beats Beck Rawlings. Very lopsided decision. She outstruck her in all three rounds. And Devin Clark versus Mike Rodriguez. That was a fun fight. In the first round, it was very close.
Yeah,
and then Devin Clark
too.
Yeah, then Devin Clark's athleticism just was too much for Mike Rodriguez. So that's how that ends up. We did our picks, but we'll go to that at the end. Is there anything else that we're forgetting here from the headlines? I guess Covington versus RDA is now going to take place in Chicago rather than Brazil. And I've heard from sources that it's because of security concerns, because of what happened with Connor. Yeah. So if that's the case, that's interesting, because Covington in Brazil would not have been a very good situation.
Did he say that they were having to book two different flights for him so people didn't know what flight he was
Whatever
on or something
Colby
like that?
Covington says, you need to just take with a grain of salt.
Yeah, but I don't know. I thought it was pretty funny, regardless.
He's been saying all kinds of interesting things lately. I'll just call them interesting because some of them are funny, some of them are not, and he's crossed the line a couple times.
Yeah,
and,
but it's crossing that line that got him this shot. So
you're right.
Hey,
you're right.
He did it.
He's, you know, people are buying into the heel heat. Nick Diaz, he accepts a one-year suspension from USADA for not adhering to the whereabouts policy.
Yeah.
And he will be eligible to fight starting next week because the whereabouts suspension happened a year ago.
I don't know if he should fight.
So he's back in the mix.
I don't know if he should. I have to question some long-term brain damage.
For Nick Diaz?
Yeah. So I don't know. I think he's doing his thing. He's having fun.
Well, if he gets offered a welterweight title shot against Tyron Woodley, he might... might come back, but we'll see. Dana White says Dana White and Jeff Nowitzki both said they thought that Nick was going to fight this year. So we'll see. Maybe he's changed his tune. He hasn't fought in a long time. Brock Lesnar signs a new deal with the WWE. Dave Meltzer says that it includes the potential for a single UFC fight, but is unsure if it would involve if it would have the capacity for more than one fight. Mm-hmm. Dana White hinted that the winner of Stipe versus Daniel Cormier might fight Brock Lesnar for the title. So that's interesting.
That'd
be
interesting. Yeah, Dana was at WrestleMania. He was basically
he was asked to be there by Ronda, and there he was.
Yeah. And did you watch that WrestleMania Ronda bout?
I did not. I heard she looked good.
She looked good. It was fun. It was fun. I was hyped up when I was watching it. She looked good in it. She kind of came out of her shell. It was fun for her to watch. I was really into it.
People said it was the best match of the night.
Guaranteed. Like, I have to agree. It was fun. I was
Did you watch all of WrestleMania?
Most of it.
Okay.
I got to see parts of it. But I was I just got off a flight, so I took a lot of naps in between during it. So I was just way too exhausted. So I was napping through most of it.
I was exhausted after this last
week. I was awake for the Ronda fight, though.
So before we get to our picks, we do have a guest this week. He joins us, I believe, from Houston, Texas. He is the man who, unfortunately, got what Joe wanted, the opportunity that Joe wanted. Yeah. We're going to see if CM Punk can handle the truth. We've got Mike the Truth Jackson joining us this week on the TSN MMA Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
CM Punk has not fought since September of 2016, where he made his much-anticipated debut in the UFC. He fought Mickey Gall. Another individual that fought Mickey Gall is actually the next person who's going to be facing CM Punk. We'll see if he can handle the truth. This is Mike the Truth Jackson joining us now on the TSN MMA show. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
I'm great. You know, it's exciting to see you get back into the octagon again. We've hung out at different UFC events, and you're a very good guy. I know you've worked really hard over the years to perfect your craft as a stand-up fighter, and obviously working on the other elements of MMA that make you a more well-rounded mixed martial artist. But for those who see your record as 0-1, they see CM Punk's record as 0-1, they may think that this is an even matchup. Explain why it isn't.
Well, it's not an even matchup because I have prior experience in combat sports. You know, for those who don't know, I come from the boxing, kickboxing realm. You know, I've competed with Legacy Kickboxing where, in these sports, I'm undefeated. I'm undefeated in boxing, undefeated in kickboxing, with all of my wins coming via knockout. You know, so to the people who are just like UFC fans or even MMA fans on a national level, they may not know about, you know, my fight resume outside of the Mickey Gall fight. So for me, that's why it's not really an even match when you really think about it. But you know, to be honest with you, none of that really matters. I'm really just here to entertain the crowd, entertain the fans, put on a great show, and to get some money.
How long have you been a combat sports practitioner? How many years have you been practicing? Martial arts in all facets.
Right. So I started as a kid, always a fan of boxing, and I dabbled in, never competed or anything like that. But this is actually, as far as MMA goes, April 1st, 2008, it's been 10 years to the month. I've been involved in the sports, from day one.
You mentioned after your last, or I think it was either before or after your last fight, that you're a big boxing aficionado. You said that you were similar to the skinny version of James Toney with the shoulder roll. You weren't going to try it on Mickey Gall. Will you try it on CM Punk?
You know what? I really don't know what I'm going to do. I'm just going to go out there and enjoy the experience. And for me, obviously, boxing is my bread and butter. And I'm gonna go out there and really impress the fans, and they need to know who I am as not really just a fighter, but just as a media personality. This is definitely gonna build a brand. People are going to see that, although I don't have this crazy record or anything like that, all these crazy number of fights, I am a skilled fighter. And as with my skills, I like to entertain people, and that's what they're going to get in Chicago at UFC 225. They're going to get an entertaining, exciting spectacle of a fight.
You were watching WrestleMania this weekend. I caught on your Twitter feed. Were you a fan of CM Punk's when he was a pro wrestler? Were you watching pro wrestling back then?
Actually, I had by the time he came around, I was getting. I do remember him in the ECW days. But that was really when I kind of got out of watching wrestling. Even the earlier days, I was a big fan of ECW. Like, one of my favorite wrestlers from that era is Taz. I love Taz, that's when I was watching ECW. And then, for me, I came around the Attitude Era. So The Rock is my number one wrestling, my number one wrestler of all time. So that's when I was rising up. But I missed the CM Punk in the WWE era, it doesn't matter. For me, I know some people are in this position that they want to fight this guy because of his popularity and his name. Like, for me, I don't get starstruck or anything like that. That's not what I'm here for. I'm here, for business reasons. And, for me, none of that matters. I'm just going to go on. Like I said, I'm just going there and smacking this man in his face.
That's funny. We actually probably have similar timelines of when we enjoyed wrestling. I was big fan during the Attitude Era, and I stopped watching probably around 2003, somewhere along there. So I don't really have much of a knowledge base of what CM Punk has done in wrestling. I do know that this is a fight you've been lobbying for quite some time, though. How did it finally come together? How did you get the call?
I mean, look, this is the fight that should have taken place to begin with. It was the fight that makes sense. From the beginning. But again, when you're a promoter and you're trying to sell this almost sideshow of a spectacle, you have to have a great storyline. And a great storyline wouldn't have been to bring in CM Punk and put him in there in his first fight against Mike Jackson and then watching me just go out there and smack this guy, and he gets no other shot. And I told people, if you go back in some of the interviews, I said prior to the golf, I was like, look, it doesn't matter who's going to fight him. I said, if Mickey Gall beats me and he gets the fight, that would be the best case scenario for Punk. You know, because I told people how the fight was going to go. I was like, yo, he's just going to go in there and get this dude down. And he's going to submit him, you know, and that's really what happened. The punches kind of, he fought the submission a little bit. And so that's where the punches came from. But I told people, like, look, he's going to get submitted. And, you know, in his mind, it's one of those things like, man, I got caught in a submission, you know, but I didn't take any damage or anything like that. So I want another shot. Give me another shot. And that's where this came from. You know, with me, I'm going in there. Now, first of all, there's no malicious intent. You know, I'm not going in there to hurt him or anything like that. But I am going to give this guy a beating, and I want him to understand that there's levels to this game, and he should have went about this a different route. But even with that, my biggest issue with this guy is he called me a can, and I take that as a sign of disrespect. You know, as I stated earlier, I have previous combat sports experience. He comes from professional wrestling where things are scripted, and the outcomes are predetermined. You know, he has no legitimate fights, or any fights for that matter, in MMA or boxing, kick, whatever. No combat sport. I don't even know if he's competing in a jiu-jitsu tournament. You know what I'm saying? And so when you have someone who's never fought in a sanctioned match or something where the outcome isn't predetermined, you can't call someone a can because you've never fought. You know what I'm saying? Even if you're the suckiest fighter in the world, and this guy's fought and you haven't fought, you can't call that guy a can because he's done something that you haven't done. And that was really my biggest issue, and that was the kind of the driving force behind this campaign to get Mike Jackson and Phil Brooks at UFC 225 in Chicago.
I remember about a year ago, I was sitting with Dana White, and I interviewed him, and I said, you know, Mike Jackson said, let's see who the real can is. And that really piqued Dana's interest. He was interested in that. So I'm glad that this has come together in this fashion. Did anything happen? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, see, and that's the thing. It's like people they don't understand that this is a business. And that's how I got the fight, is because I understand how this business works. You know, I understand what needs to be done to get these fights made. Again, I work for all these companies I've been in the sport, like I said, for 10 years. So I've seen how things work. And plus, I'm a showman and I'm a businessman. So it was only a matter of time for me to make this match happen. And it was really just, you got to be patient, baby. You got to be patient.
You cut that great Undertaker promo. Are we going to see any more promos? Are you going to take on any other personas and call out Punk? Because I think that would be great. That if you want to do showmanship and really get under his skin, you should do that. Take on the wrestling persona.
I can't give all my secrets away. You know, I charge people with consulting fees for all of these. You know, but I promise. That's what I'm saying. Is like I was picked for a particular reason, and I'm here to sell a fight. You know, obviously he's going to bring people in from his name alone. But there has to be some sort of interest to maximize the profits on this fight. And that's what we're here to do. Look, neither one of us are trying to become a UFC champion or anything like that. We're doing it simply because we love the sport. And that's why I respect, like as a man, as a fighter, I respect him for his willingness to step inside of a cage with another man and see who's the best that night. You know, so I respect him for that. Obviously, like I said, my issues with him come from his words. But his actions, as far as willingness to step into a cage, I respect that. So, again, no, nothing malicious with this fight. It's just I got to go out here and get this man in his hands.
Did anything need to be negotiated here in terms of a contract, or is the opportunity here what's important?
You know, with the contract, all that talk, you know, that'll be settled here pretty soon. But it's really the opportunity. You know, that's the number one key. You know, at this stage, I mean – I don't see a bad deal being put in place here. Like, I mean, I feel this is a win-win situation for everyone involved, you know? So obviously the number one thing is to get the headline out there. And look, as soon as we put it out, man, the buzz has been crazy. people, all these people run their mouths about how they don't want to see this fight in the UFC, blah, blah, blah. Look, these people are running their mouths. People like to talk a big game. But at the end of the day, all of those people will be tuning in to see Mike Jackson versus Phil Brooks at UFC 225 on the pay-per-view card.
So, yeah, that was my next question. Is this going to be on the pay-per-view card? I assumed it was, but have you been given...
What kind of silly question is that? Of course it's going to be on the pay-per-view.
I'd get more eyeballs on TV.
They paid this... Well, I see what you're saying, but they gave this man $500,000. You think they're going to give him $500,000 to fight on Fight Pass?
Yeah,
no.
Fair enough. I put out a tweet yesterday saying... You know, you've got this fight, you've got the two title fights, you've got Blades and Overeem. So that means that three crazy fights are going to be on the prelims. You've got Benavidez and Sergio Pettis. You've got Bektik and Ricardo Lamas. There are a lot of really good fights on this card. This is going to be if everything stays intact, then I mean, unfortunately, the trend lately has been that it hasn't been, and not that it would affect your fight, but just in general, this is going to be a really stacked card.
Of course it is. And the fight that I know like all these crazy two title fights and Curtis Blaydes are fighting. Look, that's cool. But people are tuning in to see one fight. It's the spectacle, man. I'm telling you. This is a fight. This is not something you see all the time. You can go see a Curtis Blaydes. You can tune in and watch every few months. How often you get a CM Punk versus the Truth in the UFC octagon? That's a once-in-a-lifetime fight. So this is the fight people are tuning in to see, not the title fights. No one really cares about that.
After your loss to Mickey Gall, you said you felt a lot of pressure in that fight, you know, going into that fight, with the fight against CM Punk on the line. Now that you're actually going to be fighting CM Punk, how do you plan to alleviate any sort of pressure you might feel going into it?
Well, there was a lot of pressure in that fight. There was, again, I enjoy being in the limelight and things like that, but that was... That being in that circumstances was something that I didn't really calculate. I didn't prepare for. And when the moment came, it just, you know, I zigged when I should have zagged, you know. But this one, there's pressure. Like, look, who you don't want to go in and lose to CM Punk. You know, that pressure is there. But outside of that, there is no pressure. I know he's not better than me at any facet of the game. So I'm prepared for what he has to offer, you know, whether it be on the feet, whether it be on the ground, the clinch, wherever the fight goes, I'm prepared for what a Phil Brooks has, you know. So at the end of the day, I can't let what happened in the past, I can't let that happen this time, and, you know, I'll be prepared for it.
If you beat CM Punk, do you hope to stay in the UFC, or is this a one and done?
Well, you know, I did have some issues. Well, I shouldn't even say issues. I know I called out... Artem Lobov, Conor McGregor's little homeboy, following the fight. I told him, you know, I was like, hey, if you want to boogie at 155, we can do it. And he responded to it. He liked the idea. So I'm still open to that match, you know, if that arises. But then again, we don't even know if little Artem and his little arms are going to be in the UFC after his thuggish ways at UFC 223 with his guy friend.
Well, if they cut Artem and they don't cut Conor, that says something, don't you think?
I mean, come on. Like, really the only reason Artem is in the UFC is because of Conor. That is literally the only reason, you know? So it's one of those things, man. If he gets cut, then he gets cut. No one should really care. But again, that's Conor's mistake. He, you know... Yeah, it's kind of a mistake because, you know, Conor's a ringleader over there. So it's really he's the mastermind. You know, he's the one who pulled the trigger. And, you know, his cronies, they just fell in line. So I put all the blame on Conor on this one.
What weight classes have you fought at in boxing and kickboxing?
I fought anywhere from 155 up to 178. But for me, I'm an eater. 178. 165 in boxing, 170 in MMA are my ideal fight, fighting weights. Just because, like I said, I like to eat. I hate cutting weight, and I like to eat.
So CM Punk's not going to get, like, an undersized opponent. This is your ideal optimal weight.
Oh, no. He's going to get more of my walking around weight. Well, I'll probably lose a little bit. Like, for me, it's mainly the diet and the exercise to make 170. It's nothing. It's nothing too dramatic. 55 is something I actually have to prepare for, at least a month and a half out. So it's a little bit different. But no, 170, that's a great weight for me. And that's what we on. That's what we dancing at in June.
You've been a credentialed MMA media member for, you know, the UFC, many other organizations. You can check out Mike Jackson, Mike the Truth Jackson on YouTube. There's a ton of videos you put together. So you know this game inside and out, and you know a lot of the different players in this game. Do you think that there are a lot of people that resent CM Punk for getting this opportunity?
Of course there is. Of course there is. You know, people like... They get emotionally attached to things that don't affect them at all. And that's their issues. It's like these people who are upset about this guy getting a shot, like they're worried about the wrong things. If you're a fan, look, if you don't want to watch him fight, don't watch him fight. If you're a fighter, then you shouldn't even be worried about him at the end of the day because this guy's doing his own thing. Like, we're on our own path over here. You do your thing, whether you're trying to be – obviously, that's the goal for everyone in the UFC for the most part, is to become champion. Unless you're some guy who you've kind of been a gatekeeper and you're just doing it for the love of the sport. But if you're trying to be a champion, continue to try to be a champion. Don't worry about what CM Punk is doing or what Mike Jackson is doing. Let us do our thing. Let us live our lives. And that's it. You know, people, they like worrying about stuff that I have nothing to do with them. And that's the issue.
Yeah, the cool thing about MMA is that spectacle is important. I think that spectacle is something that people need to get used to with this sport because, you know, when they toss around things like Nate Diaz fighting Tyron Woodley, that in a sense is spectacle, even though it's at the highest level. Do you think that more people need to, I guess, adapt to MMA having this element in it?
Well, look, if you're a fan of fighting, you're a fan of fighting. It shouldn't matter like who this guy is or who that guy is. Look. If you enjoy fighting like you say you enjoy fighting, then that's all that should matter. You know what I'm saying? And when you have two guys willing to step into the cage and fight each other, like, who cares? I thought you were a fan of fighting. You know what I'm saying? It's, are you a fan of fighting or are you a fan of the UFC? You got to pick. You know, you can't be selective with your emotions. I mean, I guess you can, but at the same time, it's like, don't criticize people. You got to pick what you want to do. You can't have it both ways.
Yeah. I mean, nobody's going to order this pay-per-view and shut it off during this fight. And people are going to watch.
Exactly.
They're going to enjoy it. Yeah. If you like fighting, fighting is fighting.
Exactly. Exactly. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm telling people. It's like, look, if you don't want to watch, then don't watch. Get up. Go to the bathroom. Go get a beer or something like that. Whatever. But don't worry about what we're doing.
Well, we've seen Mystic Mac, you know, Conor McGregor make all kinds of predictions. There was also Mystic Mike. After your fight against Mickey Gall, you said Gall's going to destroy Punk, and that's what happened. So what's your prediction for this fight? How does this fight end? What does Mike Jackson do to CM Punk?
Oh, man, of course, we're going for the big knockout. We know what time it is. We're going for the big knockout, and we're going to take the Mike the Truth brand and the Truth About Stuff podcast. We're going to another level. That's what we're here to do.
Can CM Punk last around with you?
Can he what?
Can he last a full round with you?
I mean, if I let him.
I'm guessing that's not the game plan?
You know what? It really depends on how I feel that day. And I'm being legit honest. You know, there are times when, you know, one part of me wants to go out here and just beat this dude up for like three rounds. Not to go, look, this isn't going to a decision by any means. But there's a part of me that wants this to go a little bit just so I can really show my skills and what I bring to the fight game. And then the other part of me really just wants to go out here and just get this check in like under a minute. So it just depends on how I feel when I wake up on June 9th.
All right, well, if I see you at Media Day, maybe I'll get a preview. I'll ask you on the Friday, or on the Thursday rather, how you're feeling, you're leaning.
That's fair. I think, obviously, you know, a few days from the fight, I should obviously have a leader of the pack. And so I'll have an answer for you guys then.
All right, Mike. Well, I look forward to speaking with you then in Chicago. It's going to be a very, like I mentioned, very stacked fight card for UFC 225. And on the main card on the pay-per-view, as Mike told me, and it was a stupid question. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to have CM Punk. He's a draw. People are going to pay money to see him.
It's the people's main. This is the people's main event in his hometown, you know, in Chicago. His backyard, where he grew up, where he was born and raised, and I get to shut the lights out. That'd be fun.
H-Town will be in the house.
Already.
All right, Mike, thanks so much for your time. We look forward to watching it.
All right, have a good one. Thanks, guys.
That was Mike the Truth Jackson. That's going to be interesting. So CM Punk, that's the news that nobody, like, huge news that nobody cared about last week because...
Too many things happened.
That, like, I didn't even know that it was made official. I asked Dana after the fights. I was like, so CM Punk, is that's official for Chicago? He's like, yeah. And I was like, okay. Yeah. I didn't realize. That's a big story.
That's a huge story. I mean, that's...
Maybe they wanted to bury it. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But I think it's going to be a... interesting fight regardless.
Well, that card is stacked now because they just added RDA versus Covington. They added that CM Punk fight. So here are like four of the main card fights. I'm going to pull up the fight card. But the four main card fights is, of course, you've got the main event for that one, Yoel versus Whitaker. Then you've got the co-main, which is probably going to be the welterweight, interim welterweight title. And then then you're going to have CM Punk is almost certainly going to be on the main card. I'd say Blades and Overeem is almost certainly going to be on the main card. So then on the undercard, one of these three fights is going to be, three of these four fights is going to be on the undercard. You're going to have Ricardo Lamas and Mirsad Bektik, which is a great fight.
Great fight, yeah.
Benavidez versus Sergio Pettis. Arlovski versus Tai Tuivasa. And Claudia Gadela versus Esparza. Three of those are going to be on the prelims. Those are like main card good fights.
Nice card.
And then you've also got Rashad Evans and Anthony Smith that are going to be on the prelims. Might be on the Fight Pass prelims if they add anything else.
That's insane.
I wouldn't be surprised if Pettis gets added to this card because he's from that area.
Yeah, especially him being off now, not getting the fight for sure.
Yeah.
And his brother's on it. Who knows?
Yeah, absolutely. Although he has said that he doesn't like fighting on the same card as his brother because if his brother loses, he gets messed up, which makes sense.
Fair.
And against Benavidez, I mean, there's a solid shot that Sergio Pettis does lose that if Benavidez is the same Benavidez as he was before that ACL tear. Well, Joe, we've got UFC on Fox coming up this weekend in Glendale, Arizona. It's Justin Gaethje in the main event against Dustin Poirier. That's going to be one heck of a card. But one fight on this card that I think is of particular interest is Michelle Waterson. Now, she's going to be at a big size disadvantage against Courtney Casey. Courtney Casey at 5'7" is the tallest fighter that she's ever competed against in MMA. And we're lucky enough to be joined by the Karate Hottie today on the TSN MMA show. We are pleased to be joined now on the TSN MMA show by the Karate Hottie, Michelle Waterson. Big fight coming up this weekend on Fox against Courtney Casey. Now, you've had back-to-back fights against Rose Namajunas and Tisha Torres, now Courtney Casey. The UFC are certainly not giving you an easy ride. How did this fight come to be?
I don't want an easy ride. I want a hard fight. Right. That's what makes life all worth it, you know? Courtney was actually on the same card as I was in Detroit, and I think we're kind of both on the same path. She's lost a couple of her fights to some tough opponents, and so have I. And so the UFC thought it was a great matchup, and so did me and my camp.
Yeah, certainly an interesting one. Different styles, different sizes, different frames. But it's rare that you see fighters with losing records that are considered to be top 10 in their division. Courtney's 3-4, but ranked 10th in the division. Is that really a testament to her overall skill?
I think when you look at the people that are in the ranked in the top 10 of the division, you have to look at a number of things. You have to look at the people that they have fought. And, you know, just because it's a loss doesn't mean it's a bad loss. You know, her fight against Felice Herring was a split decision. The fight with me against Tisha Torres was a close fight as well. And fighting Rose Namajunas, who's the current champ now, was also a close fight. So I think when you're looking at the rankings, those things come into play.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mentioned the frames before and the different sizes. She's the tallest fighter that you've ever competed against, at least in mixed martial arts. Has there been any specific training that you've had to address that? I know Holly Holm and you were very close. She's 5'8". Have you been training with her really just to get used to that size discrepancy?
Of course, yeah. Holly's one of my training partners for this camp. I also have a lot of other teammates that have reached on me that we've been training together with for this camp and just for all of my camps really, but yes, I do think it's important to get used to that size and to understand the pros and the cons of fighting somebody that tall.
What are the pros and cons?
Well, the pros fighting somebody that tall is that you know, if they want to change their levels, it's harder for them to do that in MMA. And also, I think that the pros is that I'm faster. I can get around her quicker. The cons are I have to either be all the way in or all the way out. And those are things that I've been working on this camp.
So the distance is a big deal for this particular fight.
For sure.
This past weekend, Joanna versus Rose, the rematch. What a fight. I mean, it was excellent. Five rounds back and forth. I'm curious to know what your thoughts were on it and how you scored it. What did you think when all was said and done?
I was very excited to watch this fight. I know both girls are hungry. Rose wanted to prove to herself that, you know, she earned that championship spot, and Joanna felt like she needed to get some vengeance. And so I honestly thought that the UFC should have just made that the headliner, considering all the chaos that was happening last week. When it comes to the fight, I had the fight 2-2 going into the fifth. And so the fifth to me is what determined who took the fight. And I think Rose just wanted it a bit more in the fifth and pulled off the win.
Do you remember which rounds you gave to Joanna? I'm curious to know. I gave her the third round. And I guess the judges all gave her different rounds. I think all three of them had it 49-46, but they all gave her a different round. So I'm just curious which rounds you personally thought she had won.
I gave Rose rounds 1 and 2. I gave Joanna 3 and 4, and then I gave Rose round 5.
Oh, interesting.
But that's just me watching it as a fan, not as a judge.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, of course, absolutely, so. Yeah. I mean, I'm watching backstage on monitors as well with no sound, so I'm, you know, everybody's got a different opinion. It was a very close fight. The 49-46 doesn't really tell the whole story of that fight.
Yeah.
It's
hard to judge, too, when they're 5-minute rounds. You know, there's so much to remember from a 5-minute round, and so many things to have happened within one round alone.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with such high volume, you know, the output was. Joanna thought she actually won the fight because of her output. It was. I think she outstruck Rose. I guess it was like basically Rose had landed 2/3 of the strikes that Joanna had landed. But you know, not all strikes are created equal, as you know.
Yeah, and that's hard to say because you want to be able to go off those statistics, but you also have to put into consideration cage control, power punches, and things like that. I guess I'd have to go back and watch the fight, but just watching it visually in my mind, I thought Rose won 1 and 2, Joanna won 3 and 4, and Rose pulled off the fifth round.
Yeah, well, I think the right fighter won for sure. So you mentioned the craziness of last week. You know, as somebody who was observing from afar, what were your thoughts?
I thought that it was extremely uncalled for. I mean, you know, if you have personal beef with somebody, we are in the perfect arena of a business to hash out that beef and get paid for it. So for things to go down the way they did, I thought was really unprofessional. I thought that, you know, Connor and his team acted emotionally. And as a martial artist, I think that being able to control your emotions is one of the most important things and one of the most things that I personally take pride in is having the ability to control my emotions. And I know Connor is, you know, like a huge martial artist, and he is so mentally strong when it comes to the fight game, which is why it confuses me that he let little things like that get to him to the point where he's taking his own career into, you know, I don't know how this is going to affect his career, but it's damaged his career. It's damaged the face of the UFC. We just got into New York, and all this drama goes down to New York, not to mention all the fighters that got affected by it, my teammate being one of those fighters. The ripple effect to what happened last week is just it continues to ripple and affect people, you know, not just the fighters, the coaches. They're relying on the money. You know, you put in 8 to 10 weeks of training to get paid, and now the coaches don't get paid. People's families go out there to support their their loved ones as they fight, and now they're out because they can't watch their fighters, and the employees are getting hurt, and now the employees are afraid. Now the UFC, we're here in Arizona, and we got extra security out here just for extra precautions. It's insane. Like, it's ridiculous, and it shouldn't have happened.
You mentioned your teammate, Ray. I mean, people online are accusing him of trying to get money out of the situation. He has a newborn child. He gets on a plane. His newborn child is like a whole, you know, the other side of the country. He goes there to take a fight, and people have the nerve to call him out. I thought that was one of the most disgusting things to come of last week as well.
I do, too. It's ridiculous. Like, come on, guys. Like, we're professional fighters. This is what we do for a living. Can you imagine being on the bus, having nothing to do with the drama that's going on? What would have happened if it was something even more severe? Actually, we don't even know how severe it is. You know, you get particles in your eyes, and that can affect you for the rest of your life, let alone one fight. Are you kidding me? Like, this is our livelihood. It's not like we have workman's comp. We don't get paid if we can't fight. What do we do? Like, I think that's just insane, like, how people can think that way. This is a professional sport. Like, yeah, like, we're tough guys, but guess what? This is our livelihood. This is our career. And outside of, you know, taking fights, the longevity of a fight career is short to begin with.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Ray posting his medical note that he had been discharged from the hospital left a really bad taste in my mouth. When I first saw that, I couldn't believe that people were people that, you know, say that they're fans of the sport and respect the fighters would go out of their way to say something as curt and really disgusting as what they did by you know, saying that Ray traveled all the way there and you know, tried to get out of the fight. I just thought it was absurd.
Ray was so excited to go in there. I mean, I just don't understand people sometimes. It's like, you know, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. And I think the best thing for the fighters to do is continue to fight because they're passionate about it and not even worry about, you know, the people that are just spectating, you know? They're the performers and the spectators. So, I mean, I guess you just got to leave it up to the spectators to allow them to commentate and do what they do, I guess.
Yep, I think you nailed it on the head there. It's better to just ignore it and keep doing what you're doing. He knows how hard he works. He knows the sacrifice that he's making to do what he's doing, and I think he should be happy with that alone. But I know we're out of time, Michelle, and I wanted to thank you very much. I'm looking forward to seeing your fight. It's going to be on TSN 5 in Canada as well as CTV2, broadcast across the country, network television here and in the U.S. on Fox, and we look forward to seeing you perform against Courtney Casey this weekend.
Thank you. I appreciate the time.
That was the karate hottie, Michelle Waterson. Wow, very strong words about last week's incident. You know, her training partner, Ray Borg, again, earlier this week, he posts basically a note of him being discharged from the hospital because so many people were saying he was trying to get out of cutting weight, he was trying to get out of the fight, he wants to file a lawsuit against Conor McGregor, all of this stuff. It really rubbed me the wrong way. I thought it was just disgusting. You know, I digress. We move on to the headliner for UFC on Fox in Glendale. I mean, the lightweight division's been shaken up, and I asked Dana White last week who some other contenders were. You know, they don't want to make Ferguson versus Khabib again. Conor, who knows how long he's going to be out for, what the situation with him is. Who are some other contenders? He mentioned both Gaethje and Dustin Poirier, and I'm going to definitely ask Dustin what his thoughts on that are. And we're lucky enough to have Dustin the Diamond Poirier on the show. He headlines UFC on Fox this weekend. It will air on CTV2 in Canada for the main card, TSN 5 for the main card, as well as the preliminary card. And Dustin joins us right now. I'm joined now by a man who will be in the main event of UFC Fight Night in Glendale, Arizona. You can catch the action in Canada, the prelims on TSN 5 starting at 6 p.m. Eastern, and the main card on TSN 5 as well as CTV2 on network television at 8 p.m. Eastern. Dustin Poirier, the Diamond, joins me, and we're very excited about his fight with Justin Gaethje because this should be a barn burner. Do you think there's any chance this fight goes five rounds, Dustin? In the last 4 years, the two of you have fought a combined 18 times. Only four of those have gone the distance.
I don't think so, man. I don't think this one's going 25 minutes.
Yeah, it would appear to be trending that way. I mean, you've seen the reckless style of Justin Gaethje. Is that a style that you're willing to engage, or do you plan to be a little bit more measured?
I want to be measured. You know, I'm a fighter. That's the way I'm built and wired. So I have to fight those urges to want to plant down and brawl with the guy with guys like him. You know, but I need to use my experience and technique and just fight off of skills.
Do you feel that that's kind of what happened in the Alvarez fight? You were really pushing the pace at the beginning and doing things your way, and then he started to turn it into more of a dogfight. And obviously, the way that it ended wasn't ideal. It was a no contest, and I know that's a fight you want to run back. But do you feel like you had started to buy into his style at around the towards the end of the fight?
I think I hurt him bad, and I went in to try to finish him a little bit too early. I should have stayed more measured and pick my shots, and I probably would have put him away a lot cleaner and not gotten to all that mess that we got into. But, this is a different fight here. So
I know you've wanted to fight him again. Do you know if he's changed his mind? I know he said he didn't want that fight, I guess, a couple months back.
I mean, I don't know, man. I'll be honest with you. I mean, it was Justin Gaethje.
Well, I spoke to Dana White over the weekend. I pointed out that he's mentioned he doesn't want to do Ferguson versus Khabib again. Obviously, with the Conor situation, that's a fluid story and ongoing situation. I asked him which lightweights he thought were in the picture. He said, well, off the top of my head, I can't think of any right now. I said, what about Dustin Poirier? And he said, yeah, Dustin Poirier for sure is in the mix. So is Justin Gaethje if he gets the win. So does that emphasize the importance of this particular fight?
You know, it does for sure, but every fight is so important, and this is a huge fight to me. But just the thought of that, you know, this fight possibly leading to a title shot, a long-earned title shot, you know, this could be my 20th fight in the UFC. I've definitely been working and putting in the work and earning this, you know, fight by fight. So that just adds fuel to the fire, man. I'm really excited to get there Saturday night.
I had read that your new contract, you signed a new contract with the UFC, involves championship language. Can you walk me through exactly what that means?
That just certain things happen when I challenge for the belt, when I win the belt, when I defend the belt. You know, we have certain numbers and certain tiers in my contract.
Okay, so that's already taken care of. So if you win the belt, that contract basically gets kicked into effect, and that's your new championship contract?
Exactly.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I was curious exactly what that meant, but that, you know, thank you for clarifying that. So after this past weekend, it feels like there's a lot more clarity in the lightweight division. Khabib emerges as the undisputed champion. What were your thoughts on the main event? How did you think Khabib looked, and how do you think Ally Aquinta did on such short notice taking that fight?
I think Al fought a great fight. He stayed in there. He's tough. He showed up to fight, man. He took a fight on one day's notice against one of the best lightweights in the world. Had a huge opportunity, you know, and hats off to him for just being a real fighter. But thought Khabib looked good, you know, dominated the fight, won every round. But, you know, you said there's a little bit of clarity in the division. I think it's more clustered now. I think if the original fight would have happened, we'd have a little bit more clarity.
The Ferguson and Khabib fight. Yeah, I mean, that obviously means there's a lot more challengers now for you to look at, you know, after this fight ends, because you've got Ferguson, you've got Kevin Lee, Barboza. Those guys are fighting next weekend. Obviously, Nate Diaz, who knows what's going on with him. Eddie Alvarez, who we mentioned. Chiesa needs a fight rebooked. So does Anthony Pettis, who I know you most recently defeated. So you're right. There are a lot of contenders, but I imagine that a win this weekend puts you right there.
Oh, it does for sure, and I know it. The UFC knows it, and now it's just time to go out there and work. You know, I got to make weight and then show up to the arena and handle business.
The UFC has their own rankings for divisions. I'd love to hear how you ranked the stacked lightweight division. I'll give you some names. You tell me where you'd rank them. I'll leave your name out just because we want to stay away from any sort of bias, obviously. But we've got Tony Ferguson, Conor McGregor, Kevin Lee, Edson Barboza, Justin Gaethje, Nate Diaz, and Eddie Alvarez. How do you rank those guys?
Obviously Conor was the champ who never lost his belt, so he would be number one. I would put Khabib number two, Ferguson number three. Who else did you name?
Alvarez, Kevin Lee, Barboza, Gaethje, Nate Diaz.
I don't know, man. That latter part of the rankings right there would get kind of murky for me. I'm not sure. Alvarez would be the next.
I'm not sure, man.
Do you think a win over Gaethje puts you above Alvarez in the pecking order?
I do. I believe so.
So that might end up being the fight. It might end up being a rematch. I mean, if Alvarez is waiting for a big fight and somebody who's moved up and has a bigger position in the division, a win over Pettis and a win over Gaethje in the time that I don't think he's fought since the fight with you, correct? Has he fought yet? Oh, yeah, sorry, he had the Gaethje fight. So he had the Gaethje. Yeah, he beat Gaethje. But listen, man,
I'm not even looking that far ahead. I'm looking at Saturday. None of that matters what we're talking about until I handle business Saturday.
With a guy like Gaethje, do you expect him to just come flying out of the gates at you? Is that what you're anticipating?
Yeah, that's the only way he can fight. I mean, if he tries to kickbox with me on the outside or technically fight with me, I'm gonna show the world how good I am, show him how good I am, and he knows that. So he's going to try to make it a dog fight, make it gritty, stay in my face. And he's made it known, you know, he said in interviews and stuff leading up to this that's what kind of fight he wants.
Who are some opponents in the past that you fought that emulate that style? Have there been any?
I mean, I'm sure there's been flashes of it from opponents, but not any as hard-nosed, walk forward, take what you can give them kind of guys.
The story Eddie Alvarez told about their time on the show with the coach's challenge, apparently, like they went swimming against each other, and the way that Alvarez described it is Gaethje barely knew how to swim and swam 1.5 miles and nearly drowned in order to do it. And that told him a lot about how Justin Gaethje is. He said that's basically how he fights. He just goes forward and he pushes himself, and that's the way that he does things. So I think that kind of style is, you know, Alvarez got baited and he wanted to make it into a slugfest. You're taking a different approach. You want to make this into your fight and emulate your strengths. Where do you think you'll have the best success against him? Is it just slowing the pace down and not getting baited?
You know, even if it turns into that, I'll beat him there. I'm a superior fighter. Anywhere the fight goes, I'm going to win there.
And finally, before we go, what were your thoughts on the Conor McGregor incident last week? Obviously, it really shook the MMA world. It you know, left a lot of collateral damage for that UFC 223 card, with four of the fights eventually dropping off the card. When you were looking at this from afar, what was your takeaway?
You know, my phone was blowing up. A lot of people were texting me and stuff like that. But I try to kind of stay off of social media and read it all into it, because I didn't want to get, like, really invested in it or really care about it. Because, like I said, I was in the final. I'm focused on this fight. I was in my final week of camp, and I didn't even, you know, if I was like, if they, when the lightweight fight fell apart, I was like, if they call me, great. I text Sean Shelby and let him know I can make the weight if they need me, and I would love the opportunity. But besides that, I really didn't play into it, man. I mean, it's horrible that fighters got injured and taken off the card, but I don't know exactly all the details and stuff. I haven't really read into everything yet. Just hearing people talk.
Well, it's great to hear your immense focus going into this fight. It should be exciting. That's why they make that the main event on Fox. They've got you, Justin Gaethje. That's one of those can't-miss fights that I think everybody's really looking forward to. And as soon as it was announced, you know, it was just basically wholesale excitement. And we really look forward to that. As I mentioned, the prelims will be on TSN5, the main card, also on TSN5 as well as CTV2 up here in Canada. We really appreciate your time, Dustin, and best of luck this weekend.
Hey, thanks, man. Enjoy the fight. Thanks for having me on.
So, UFC on Glendale this weekend, UFC on Fox card. This is a really, really fun card because it's headlined by Justin Poirier versus Justin Gaethje. I don't know if I called him Dustin or Justin. The Justin-Dustin thing has been throwing me off all week. Yeah. This fight is not going to go. This is a 5-round fight.
Yeah, it's a great fight. Great matchup. Great excitement all around. I'm leaning towards Dustin Poirier.
I'm in the same boat.
I think his technical striking and, again, the ability to have more tools wins them this fight, but close fight regardless. If Justin Gaethje is so good at pulling you into these types of wars,
yeah.
And I mean, I think Poirier is a guy that could bite on that style of fight as well. So I think regardless, that's going to be, you know,
it's really
one of those exciting fights that we're all hyped for.
It's power
versus
pressure.
Hopefully it stays technical. Again, I'm not a big fan of those
sloppy, winging body shots.
And but that co-main event is going to interest me, obviously, for the great striking reasons.
Of what, Carlos Condit and Alex Oliveira?
I think the co is Adesanya, maybe, isn't it?
I don't think that's the co-main event. I'll pull it up. I think it's actually in the reverse order of what I have here, but maybe not. Let's see. UFC Glendale. See if that fight card is determined. Yeah, so the co-main is actually, it's Condit versus Alex Oliveira. right. So, yeah, this order that I have is correct. It's just in reverse order. So it's from the bottom up. So, yeah, Poirier versus Gaethje. And then Alex Oliveira takes the fight on two weeks' notice and is a big favorite over Carlos Condit.
Yeah, that's crazy.
The price jumped from minus 170 to minus 270 in the span of an hour yesterday, and now it's kind of gone back down to minus 210
for
Alex
fight?
Oliveira. Well, I think it's really going to be the big test of what Carlos Condit has left. I thought that Magny was a bad matchup for him, but Oliveira is probably going to be happy to stand and strike with him, and that, you know, you're basically going to see what Carlos Condit has left.
Can his chin take it? You know, Oliveira's sitting there tough. He's going to not move back.
Big win
over
Yancy
Medeiros. Catch you. Condit tries jumping in with some of his knees or something. Could be very dangerous.
Yeah, I actually like. I think at this price, Condit is worth a look.
Yeah,
but it's not what my pick will be for this week. But then you've also got Adesanya. He's back. Israel Adesanya against Marvin Vettori. That's a tough fight
Vittori's
for him.
Vittori's tough.
Vittori's a tough.
Vittori's tough. I mean,
Vittori's
more a little bit more wrestling based, right?
So yeah, but also likes to stand and strike. So
yeah, which I think is wrestling will be a strategy if he's smart.
Yeah. So we'll see. You know, Adesanya, again, a big favorite over a guy who is just a much higher level of competition than his last fight. So this is going to be a big test for him.
Yeah, no, I'm excited for it, man. Anytime, you know, the style bender's in there. People still ask me who's one of my favorite fighters to watch in kickboxing. It's Israel Adesanya.
And now,
see him in the UFC and against strikers who aren't as great. And, you know, seeing him use his style, you know, bending abilities to do well in MMA, it's exciting. So, yeah, I hope people follow along and I hope he continues his rise.
And the string of tough fights for Michelle Waterson continues. She faces Courtney Casey.
Yeah,
She's had, what, Felice?
She's an underdog, too, in this fight, right?
Yeah,
small underdog.
But and I think rightfully so, actually. But so here's her stretch recently. She lost to Tisha Torres. Sorry, it wasn't Felice Herring. It was Tisha Torres. Herring actually beat her opponent, Courtney Casey. That's why I got confused. But Tisha Torres, she lost the UFC 218 by unanimous decision, got subbed by Rose Namajunas last April, beat Paige VanZant, and beat Angela Magana was her debut. That was kind of a gimme for her. But, you know, the stretch of tough opponents continues for her because Courtney Casey, to me, is not an easy out.
No, she's tall. She's rangy. Like, yeah, it's going to be a tough fight regardless.
Yeah, a winnable fight for Waterson.
Oh yeah, it's winnable, but I think I believe a lot of people are picking Casey to win this
one. Yeah, and I can see why. I'm kind of on the fence on it, to be honest, at this point. Antonio Carlos Jr. versus Tim Boach. This is an interesting one because Tim Boach, I think, has the power to finish Antonio Carlos Jr., but Boach is also somebody who's been subbed before on several occasions, and Carlos Jr. can sub him easily. He's one of the best.
He's got 80% submission. Wins, so 80% of his wins by submission.
Yeah, that's his background. I mean, he's a world jiu-jitsu champion.
Yep.
But at the same time, Boach can crack guys, man. Like, Boach is a big dude, a good wrestler.
That I was talking about earlier. He's got firepower, so if you got firepower, you're always in the fight.
Yeah, so that's one. I wouldn't put the price on that one is minus 270 for Carlos Jr. That's a big stay away for me.
Yeah.
But one that isn't is Muslim Salikov, minus 165 against more of a stand-up fighter in Ricky Rainey. I think those odds are a little bit too low for Salikov.
Yeah.
Fighting a guy who's lost Bellator fights.
Yeah, don't know enough about them to comment on it, but I've heard big things about him.
Yeah,
so.
Salikov lost to Alex Garcia last time. Yeah, by submission. You could tell his ground game wasn't quite there yet, but I think this will be more of a stand-up fight. Wilson Hayes versus John Moraga. Moraga coming off of a big win. Hayes coming off of a loss back in Edmonton against Henry Cejudo. And Moraga beating Magomed Bibulatov, who many people thought was going to be the next big prospect at flyweight. So this should be an interesting one. I actually think this line should be flipped with Wilson Hayes at minus 140. But you've also got Brad Tavares, Christoph Jotko. That's a good one in the middleweight division. Dan Morritt making his debut on short notice against Gilbert Burns. I believe he's either a current or former LFA champion or RFA, I guess. What's it called now? Is it LFA?
RFA, is it?
I think, yeah, it merged to be RFA.
Yeah, I think so.
So that should be an interesting one. He's coming in on short notice, big underdog. But Gilbert Burns, he's a really good fighter. Just sometimes you just never know what Gilbert Burns are going to get.
Yeah, I was shocked to see Okami on the card.
Yeah, Yusin Okami's back. Well, he came back, if you'll recall, a couple months ago to fight at 205.
China, wasn't it in China?
It was.
I can look now quickly.
Yeah, I've got it here in front of me, too. But he came in at 205. He had been fighting at 170.
He lost to OSP.
Yes, we lost to OSP, who was way bigger than him because Okami's starting to fight at 170. This fight's going to be at 170 against Diego Lima. And I guess it's even money at this point, which is interesting to me. You know, Diego Lima to me is just not a trustworthy fighter. Sometimes he's really good and sometimes he just doesn't show up. So that's a tough one to call because I don't know how much Yushin Okami has left in the tank either.
Yeah.
Arjun Buller, another big Canadian. We talked about OAM earlier, Olivier, and now we've got Arjun Buller, who's another guy who could make waves for Canada this year in the heavyweight division. He's a big favorite against Adam Wozorek. I think he should win that one.
Yeah.
Matthew Lopez, -130 against Alejandro Perez. That's a good fight. And then Luke Sanders, who another guy who's not really very trustworthy, but a very, very talented guy against Patrick Williams. So he should win that fight. But then again, people thought that he should have won the last fight against Sukum Tot, and he got knocked out. He was almost as big of a favorite there. Lost by submission to Yuri Alcantara. He was winning that fight up until that point. So it'll, you know, this is a bounce-back fight for Luke Sanders, most likely. We did our picks last week. Two of them were voided because of all the craziness. I had Ferguson, and then I had to change that pick.
Yeah.
Oh, but I changed it. What did I change it to? Oh, no, I changed it to Chiesa, so he was scratched.
And he was scratched,
as well.
Too. Yeah.
And then I had the parlay of Carolina and Ashley Evan-Smith, which came through. So that was around +130. And you had Olivier Aubin-Mercier, which was +120. So we both came out on top this past week.
Yeah.
We're starting to bounce back. I'm above even again.
That's it. You're good. I'm still catching.
Do you have anything for this card? Is there anything you see?
When I was staring at it, trying to find it, it was tough.
Yeah.
It's really tough because the fights that I like, they're just big favorites.
Yeah. So I don't really know, like, how
am I going to climb here? Like, I like it. You know, I like Adesanya. I like, you know, certain fights that are just.
So put together a parlay.
Yeah, I'm going to have to parlay.
I'll give you my pick. My pick is Lauren Muller against Shanna Dobson. She's -105 right now, very small underdog. But I really liked what I saw from her. And, you know, she trains with Eric Del Fierro out in San Diego. She trains with your friend Angela Hill.
Yeah.
I just think she's got...
We recently followed each other on Instagram.
Lauren Muller? Yeah.
Yeah, we recently started seeing more, and then we started following each other recently. So.
And she had a really good fight on the Dana White Contender Series. And I just think she has a lot of upside. She's still very young, 26 years old.
Yeah.
Won her last fight by a unanimous decision and got a contract. She looks the part, and she's a very, very talented fighter. So, and Shanna Dobson's a good fighter too, but she's just very raw. I think Dobson has really good power, and if Muller can withstand that for the first round, she should be able to win the fight.
That's
my take on it. I just think that she's got more of a path to victory.
Yeah. Well, let's see what my pick's going to be. I'm going to have to parlay. Let's go. It's still not going to go much, but I like Arjun Buller and I like Adesanya.
All right, let's see how that one shakes out.
Salikov could be a nice add too.
Let's take a look at the calculator first before you add anything, because I think it'll be close to even. -130, you're okay. That's not bad.
All right, let's keep those two then.
Okay. Buller, Adesanya for you.
I don't like any of the other ones. Every close fight I see, I mean, I need to climb a little bit.
All right. Actually, I like quite a bit on this card, but the one that really stood out to me when the lines
What
came
other
out,
ones would you have picked?
John Moraga against Wilson Hayes.
You would have picked who?
John Moraga.
Really?
Yeah.
At +120?
Yeah, +120. I like that. And I like the other thing I was weighing was doing Arjun and Muslim Salikov together.
Yeah, but, Salikov I like. Yeah.
But I decided not to do that one. And I also like Poirier. But not enough.
Yeah,
I mean,
not enough
betting
to
against
that's,
Justin Gaethje.
See, that
never
was
good
my
idea.
Initial pick, was to pick Poirier.
Yeah.
But I'm like, it's too close, and the main events, you know, all the main cards, like they're close fights. That's why they're put on the main card. So a lot of these big upsets and fights are going to happen in the undercard. So I'm happy with Adesanya and Buller.
All right, well, that'll do it for us. Anything else you want to touch on, Joe? Is there anything we're missing?
Nah, I'm pretty good.
All right, UFC Fight Night, Gaethje versus Poirier. Prelims are on TSN 5 at 6 p.m. Eastern. Main card, 8 p.m. Eastern on CTV2 and TSN 5. Next week, we'll break down the UFC Atlantic City card, which features a main event between Edson Barboza and Kevin Lee, the Motown Phenom. That should be a lot of fun. That's a good card. I know Robin's going down there. He's driving down there for that one, so that'll be fun. And, of course, check out Joseph Altolini on YouTube. Your latest instructional videos are on what? I keep writing the same one. I've got to go back and check.
But this one coming out, last week was understanding range and distance control. I was explaining what close range, mid range, and long range was. So I always use that word distance control and understanding distance. So that's a video to watch.
Who should have watched it this past week?
Understanding distance more. I think a lot of the guys who did well, like the pressure fighters, came forward because they had to. A lot of good movement. But if you want to watch good distance control, guys like Zabit, you know, is a guy who understands good distance control. I can keep going on and on. But
I'm saying, no, who should have watched the video?
Who should have watched the video?
Yeah, who could have benefited from it?
I don't know. Rose did good with it. I don't know. Who do you think? You got me on the spot here.
Let me take Let's take a look.
He ate a lot of good left kicks, maybe used his little bit more in-and-out movement.
Well, maybe Joe Lauzon, because he was
Lauzon,
the pocket.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
Yeah.
Because Lauzon just stood there in touch range where he should have had to move his feet and touch. But, yeah, that's a good answer. Yeah, I agree with that.
Look at that.
And then
I'm just schooling you on martial arts here, Joe.
This week is going to be different ways to defend the front kick.
So oh, wow,
it's
cool.
It's going to be a good one. So
I'm guessing you don't use your stomach, I would imagine.
Actually, some of them you do.
Really?
Like if you press, if you throw a front kick and I close the distance jam the punch. Oh, sorry, I jam the front kick. So it's easier for me to grab and counter, and it shuts down the power. Because power happens at the end of the punch, the end of the kick, the snap part of it.
Right.
So if you take that snap by
you're getting them on the bend,
boom, you can stop it a lot easier.
Cool. Good to know.
There you go.
So if a guy tries to kick me, I should just walk right into it.
Boom, yeah.
Good advice.
Rush it. Rush out. Rush him. Rush him, Aaron.
So Bazooka Kickboxing, if you want to learn more great tips from Joe in person, you can go to Bazooka Kickboxing on Progress Road in Scarborough.
680 Progress Avenue, bazookakickboxing.ca if you want more info on our schedule.
Yeah, you can always reach out to Joe on social media as well if you have any questions. Joe is happy to answer any inquiries you might have. So we'll be back next week. Should be a lot of fun. When's your next glory card?
It's going to be May 12th. I just got an email now. I have to book my plane ticket to. We're going to Lille, France.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one.
So you're here for a while. That's good.
I'm here. Yeah, it's here. But, being here is just now it's catching up. I did those two back-to-back trips. And I'm tired. literally, I'm so exhausted right now. I don't want to see an airplane. I don't want to wait in line. I don't want them to call my zone. I don't want to. I'm done. Yeah. I'm done with airports for 3 weeks.
Yeah, I'm tired, too. That was a long week. I was flying into New York and everything, so it's not that much of a flight.
Yeah.
But I had good airport luck. I'll tell you about it off air.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll be back next week.